glad you can't see my face now, because I still have no idea what you're talking about.
I did that thing where you pull your knees and elbows in, and try to get so small you disappear. Oh, you know, like I'm going to come home one day and my whole world will have burned down.
Well, she made a pained sound. I don't really know what to say to that.
That's because there's nothing you can say. It's just the way it is.
Okay,
she announced, with the unwarranted confidence of a World War I general sending his men over the top.
I've got things to say.
Bridge.
No, listen, there is actually a choice here, and the choice is either you never trust anybody ever again and pretend that stops people hurting you when clearly it doesn't, or, don't do that. And maybe your house will burn down, but at least you'll be warm, and probably the next place will be better, and come with an induction hob.
I couldn't tell whether Bridget's strategy of distracting me from my problems by being odd was deliberate or not. I think you've drifted from giving me a pep talk into advocating arson.
I'm advocating taking a chance on a nice man who you're clearly into and who'll treat you well. And if you think that's arson, then yay, arson.
But I've already dumped him.
Then undump him.
It's not that...
If you say it's not that simple one more time, I'm going to get in an Uber, come over there and poke you sharply in the ribs.
I gave another weird, weepy laugh. Don't call an Uber. Their business practices are unethical.
The point is, this is all fixable. If you want to be with Oliver, you can be with Oliver.
But should he be with me, though? I mean, he drove me all the way to Lancashire to see my dad, stood up to my dad for me, drove me all the way home again, and then I broke up with him through a bathroom door.
I agree,
conceded Bridget.
That wasn't ideal, and you probably hurt his feelings quite badly, but ultimately, whether he wants to be with you is his decision.
And you don't think maybe he'll decide not to go out with the crying man in the toilet?
I think people surprise you. And really, what do you have to lose?
Pride? Dignity? Self-respect?
Luke, you and I both know you have none of those things.
She'd made me laugh again. I was pretty sure it was her superpower. That doesn't mean I want to give Oliver Blackwood a chance to kick me hard in the fields.
I know you don't. But from what you've said, he sort of deserves one. And anyway, it might go well.
Yeah, I muttered. That's what they said about the invasion of Iraq.
We're talking about asking a cute boy to give you a second chance, not starting a war.
You have no idea how many second chances he's already had to give me.
Which means he clearly likes you. Now go and tell him you're sorry and that you like him back, because you obviously are and you obviously do.
But I'll fuck it up, or he'll not want to see me, or...
Or you'll be unbelievably happy together, and if it goes wrong, we'll figure it out, like always.
That was about 50% comforting, 50% embarrassing. You shouldn't have to keep scraping me off the floor.
That's what friends do. Scrape each other off the floor and hold your hair back when you're being sick in the toilet.
You're so sentimental, Bridge.
Holding someone's hair while they throw up is one of the most loving things you can do for them.
You know, you could just drink less.
I could, but I choose not to.
I mumbled something.
What was that?
I love you, Bridget.
I love you too, Luke. Now go get your man.
At 3 a.m, how will that help?
It's romantic. You're chasing after him in the rain.
It's not raining.
Don't ruin this for me.
And you don't think he'd prefer a polite text after we've both had a decent night's sleep? She squeaked in exasperation.
No! And besides, he won't be sleeping. He'll be staring out the window, wondering if you're looking at the same moon he is.
How could we be looking at different moons? Also, he can't see the moon because it's apparently raining.
Okay, now you're just stalling, so I'm hanging up.
She hung up. After she'd gone, I slowly uncurled. I still wasn't quite ready to stand up or leave the bathroom, but I was taking my victories where I could find them. As enthusiastic as Bridge had been about the plan, I wasn't sure that showing up at Oliver's doorstep at stupid o'clock in the morning would come across as quite as romantic and spontaneous as she was hoping, especially since I'd done it before, although at least then it had been at a slightly more sociable time. In my defence, on that occasion he dumped me, so, in a way, we were one for one. If we ignored the fact that he'd dumped me specifically because of my behaviour, and I dumped him, specifically because of my behaviour. And while I got what Bridge was saying about letting him choose whether he wanted to deal with my bullshit or not, I couldn't shake the sense that we'd hit a level of bullshittery that would make the choice kind of a no-brainer. Because this was what he was getting. Someone who'd spent 5 years burying himself in cynicism and apathy. And honestly, hadn't been so great before then, either. I didn't want to be that person for Oliver. I didn't want to lash out or run away every time I thought something might hurt me. But it was going to take more than a month of fake dating and a couple of rounds of French toast to dig my way out. It would be easier for everyone if I never spoke to him again. But Bridge was right. He deserved better than easy. And if that meant I had to stand there on his doorstep, again, and say I was sorry, again, then I guess I'd do it. And maybe this time I could let him see me, all the ways I was messy and hurt and lost, and all the ways he made me better. Maybe he deserved that too. 20 minutes later, against my better judgment, I was in a cab, on my way to Clerkenwell. Chapter 32. I was standing on the pavement outside Oliver's, trying to figure out exactly how bad an idea this had been, when it started to rain. Which, at the very least, got in the way of my plan to dither helplessly for 20 minutes before wussing out and going home. I mean, I still hadn't completely written off Operation Wuss Out, but somehow, there I was, unsexily damp and terrified, ringing Oliver's doorbell at 4 in the morning. Oh, shit. What had I done? I stared at Oliver's pretty glass panels, wondering if it was too late to run away, like a kid playing a prank. And then the door opened, and Oliver was standing there in his stripiest pyjamas, his face pale and his eyes red-rimmed.
"What are you doing here?" he said, in a this-is-the-last-thing-I-need-right-now sort of voice.
With no idea how to answer that, I called up Cam's article on my phone and jammed it in Oliver's face like an FBI agent in a movie.
"What's this?" he squinted.
"It's an article about what a loser I am by some guy I met for 5 minutes a month ago."
"When you woke me up," said Oliver, "at a time so unsociable it can't even be called the middle of the night because that was about 2 hours back, I'd hoped you might at least be coming to apologize. I didn't expect that you'd be asking me to do background reading on a wet smartphone."
Fuck, I was fucking this up. "I am," I tried. "I mean, I do. I apologize. But I wanted you to know why I flipped out, for context."
"Ah, yes." He gave me one of his cold looks. "The most important part of any apology."
Rainwater slithered from the tips of my hair and down my face. "Oliver, I'm sorry. I'm really sorry. I'm sorry for pushing you away. I'm sorry for losing my shit. I'm sorry for locking myself in the bathroom like an emo teen at a bad party. I'm sorry I suck at apologies. I'm sorry I've been a crap fake boyfriend, and I'm sorry I keep showing up on your doorstep begging you to give me another chance."
"It's not that I don't appreciate the gesture. Well, gestures."
He was doing the temple-rubbing thing that meant he had no idea how to deal with me.
"But I don't understand why this keeps happening. Honestly, I don't even understand what happened tonight."
"Which is why," I yelled, brandishing the phone again, "I tried to give you context." He glanced from me to the phone and back again.
"You should probably come in."
I came in and stood in his hallway, dripping. Neither of us seemed entirely sure what was meant to happen next. Then Oliver said,
Why don't you take a moment to dry off, and I'll have a look at this article, if you're still comfortable with that.
I wasn't comfortable with that at all, but having shoved it under his nose, it was a bit late to back out now. Besides, I was committed to being honest and transparent, and, oh, help. Trying not to panic, I let Oliver shepherd me upstairs, where he took a towel from the airing cupboard, because of course he had an airing cupboard, and of course the towel was all fluffy and sweet-smelling. I hugged it needily. He gave me a little nudge towards the bathroom.
There's a dressing gown behind the door. I'll be in the kitchen.
Feeling both drier and floatier, I came down a few minutes later, wrapped up in navy blue fleece, and found Oliver at the table, frowning at my phone.
Lucien.
He looked up with a less encouraging expression than I might have hoped.
I'm still confused. From your reaction, I assumed you'd read something that, at the very least, put one of our careers in danger. This is a contentless piece of self-serving fluff by an obvious hack.
I slid awkwardly onto a chair opposite. I know, but it felt really true in the moment.
I'd say I'm not unsympathetic, but since you locked yourself in a bathroom and dumped me over it, I am finding sympathy difficult.
I get that. Oliver crossed one leg over the other, looking prim and serious.
I think what I need you to understand is that even though we are not in an official relationship, we have made a commitment to each other that we are both relying on. And when you behave unreliably, it has real consequences for me, logistically and...
He gave a tight little cough.
Emotionally.
This was everything I thought I didn't like about Oliver Blackwood. Severe, stern, headmastery, and not in a kinky way, and with that faint edge of superiority that suggested he would never flake out or fuck up. But I knew him better now, and I knew I'd hurt him. I realize I've treated you badly, and I realize my many, many issues aren't an excuse for that. And I wish I could tell you I won't do this again, but I can't, because I'm worried I will.
Well, I appreciate your honesty, he said, still rather coldly. I'm not sure where that leaves us.
I can't tell you where it leaves you, but where it leaves me is, I want to give this another go, and I'll try to do better.
Lucien.
He gave a soft sigh.
I really don't want to go alone to my parents' anniversary, but it's a little late for me to find anybody else now.
That wasn't quite the falling back into my arms Bridget had led me to expect. If that's what you need, and that's all you want, I can still do that for you. I think I know you well enough that I could pass as your boyfriend for one party, even if we don't speak until then.
What about your work function?
It'll be fine, I shrugged. I've got most of the donors back, and, you know, I'm starting to think that if they come for my personal life again, I might actually be able to face taking them to an employment tribunal. Oliver was looking at me, his eyes all silver-grey and searching.
Why couldn't you before?
Because getting fired just felt like something I deserved.
And it doesn't now?
Sometimes, but not so much.
What changed?
He asked, with a quizzical look.
I groaned.
Don't make me say it.
Say what?
His foot flickered impatiently.
You'll have to forgive me if I'm not at my most perspicacious, but I've only had 3 hours sleep.
Which I notice is still enough sleep to say perspicacious. Oliver, you! It was you! You're what changed! And now I've blown it and I'm sad. He softened for about a second, and then unsoftened abruptly.
If I've been such a positive influence, why on earth did you dump me through a bathroom door over a nothing article in a newspaper famed for its misspellings?
I think what you're underestimating here is how much better I can get and still be a complete disaster.
You're not a complete disaster, Lucien. I just don't want to be going through this again in a fortnight, and you haven't been able to give me any reassurance that I won't.
I took a deep breath. Okay, look, the truth is we're both terrible at relationships. That's how we got into this position in the first place. But it feels to me that you're asking for the wrong thing.
Is that so? He raised an unconvinced eyebrow. I flatter myself that I'm asking for something quite reasonable, which is that our relationship, fake or otherwise, isn't going to be constantly punctuated by your appearing on my doorstep apologizing for your shitty behavior.
And I see why that's not great, except I'm not sure it's the real problem. I don't know how to promise you that I won't overreact or lash out or say something I shouldn't. All I can promise, and I really think it's what I should be promising, is that I'll be honest with you about what's going on with me.
This was hell. I'm pretty sure this was hell.
That's what I should have done tonight. And that's why we're here.
There was a long silence. It was 50-50 whether this was good silence or bad silence. All right. Oliver eyed me warily. So, if you had been honest with me, as you've suggested, what would you have said?
I opened my mouth. Nothing came out.
I think, Oliver murmured, we've discovered the flaw in this plan.
No, give me a minute. I can do this. I can trust someone with, like, my feelings and shit.
Why was this so hard?
I mean, it was Oliver, basically the most decent person I'd met in the last decade who I wasn't already friends with.
Fuck.
I tried. This is probably going to sound totally bizarre, but do you mind if I go in your bathroom?
Sorry, I assume you're not asking to use the facilities.
No, I think I'd just like to go in there.
If you dump me through a door again, I'll be very angry.
I'm not going to, and my end goal is to get to the stage where we can have this kind of conversation in the same room. But, you know, baby steps.
He made a defeated gesture. Fine, if that's what you need. So I went to Oliver's bathroom, locked the door behind me, and sat on the floor with my back to it.
You can still hear me, right?
Loud and clear.
Okay. Breathe. Breathe. I had to breathe. This, whatever it is that we're having, it's the best thing that's happened to me in 5 years. And I know it's supposed to be fake, but it's not felt that way to me for, I don't know, a while. And that's, I guess, rearranged my messed upness in ways that are overall really, really good. But I also feel vulnerable and frightened, like, all the time.
The door shuddered slightly, which took me a moment to interpret. But then I thought maybe Oliver was sitting on the other side of it, with his back to mine. Lucian, I don't know what to say.
You don't have to, just, listen, or something.
Of course.
So, when I saw that article, it brought up all this old stuff that I... Yeah. You see, my last boyfriend, Miles, we were together all through university and a little bit after. And I think it was one of those relationships where the stuff that keeps you together at uni doesn't work in the real world. We were sort of going through a rough patch, but I guess I didn't know how rough, because he went and sold his story, my story, our story, to the Daily, I can't even remember which, for 50 fucking grand.
I heard Oliver draw in a breath. I'm sorry. That must have felt awful.
Pretty much. What I couldn't hack was, I thought when you're in love, it's supposed to be safe, isn't it? You're supposed to be able to do things and try things and make mistakes, and it'll be okay because you know who you are to each other. I genuinely believed we had that, but He took it and flogged it to the press. And they turned 5 years of my life into a couple of threesomes and that one time we did cocaine at a party in Soho.
Thank you for telling me, Oliver whispered through the door. This is clearly very difficult for you, and I appreciate your trust.
I should have been done, but somehow, now I'd started talking about this shit, I couldn't stop. He met my mum. I told him about my family, about my dad, how I felt, what I wanted, what I was scared of, and he made it all so ugly and so cheap. And now everyone thinks that's who I am, and half the time I believe it too.
You shouldn't, and I know that's easy to say and harder to believe, but you're far more than pictures in papers and a couple of sad little articles written by sad little men.
Maybe, but it came back on Mum as well. She's gone through enough without the tabloids turning her into a crazy has-been.
Of course, he said softly. I don't know her as well as you, but she seems resilient, to say the least.
That's not the point. She shouldn't have to pay because I trust the wrong people.
One person who betrayed you, which is on him.
My head fell back gently against the door. The thing is, I didn't even see it coming. I thought I knew him better than anyone, and he still...
Again, that's about him and his choices, not about you and yours.
Rationally, I know that. I just don't know when it's going to happen again.
And so you haven't been with anyone since?
Basically. I tried to pick at Oliver's floor like I had my own, but the grouting was too clean. It was liberating at first. It felt like the worst had already happened, so I thought I might as well do anything I wanted. Except then, doing what I wanted became steering into people's worst assumptions about me. And before I knew it, I'd lost my job, alienated most of my friends, and my health was trashed, and my house was a tip. I felt another ripple through the door. It was weirdly comforting, like he was touching me.
I had no idea how difficult it's been for you. I'm so sorry, Lucien.
Don't be. Because then I met you. Leaving the bathroom still seemed like a terrifying prospect, but I was coming to the conclusion that waiting wouldn't make it less terrifying. And while Oliver's toilet was way nicer than, say, mine, I hadn't quite sunk low enough that I'd be happy to live there for the rest of my life. I got shakily to my feet, opened the door, and walked straight into Oliver's arms. Yeah, I said. A few minutes later, still clinging to him. I should probably have done this the first time round. He gave me a wholesome cotton pyjama squeeze.
We can work on it.
Does this mean you'll have me back? I was treated to one of his intense stares.
Do you want to come back? I'm only just beginning to understand how much this is asking of you.
No, Oliver. I came to your house at whatever it is in the morning and spilled my guts all over your bathroom floor because I'm so-so about this.
I find it oddly comforting that you're feeling well enough to be sarcastic at me.
I risked smiling at him, and he smiled slowly back.
Chapter 33.
A few minutes later, we were back in Oliver's tiny kitchen. And he was Olivering at the stove because he'd apparently decided that what we really needed now was hot chocolate. Sitting uselessly at the table, I faffed around with my phone and discovered it was well after 5. You are going to be wrecked at work tomorrow.
I'm not in court, so I have no intention of actually going in.
Can you do that?
Well, I'm technically self-employed, though the clerks tend not to see it that way. And I haven't had a sick day in... ever.
I flooped. I'm sorry. Again.
Don't be. Obviously, I'd rather we hadn't had a crisis, but I've come to terms with the idea that there's something I care more about than my job.
I had no idea how to reply to that. Part of me wanted to point out that he probably shouldn't put boys ahead of his career. But since I was the boy, that would have been pretty self-defeating.
Yeah, I think I'll be pulling a sickie too.
I don't think it counts as pulling a sickie if you're actually having a hard time.
What?
I watched the muscles in his back as he stirred his pan, and couldn't tell if noticing that kind of thing again meant I was getting my shit together, or my shit had never been together to begin with.
I should ring them up and say, sorry, I gave myself a nervous breakdown with a Guardian article.
He came over with a pair of mugs and set them down carefully on coasters. I folded my hands around mine, letting the warmth seep into my palms as the rich scent of chocolate and cinnamon wafted over the table.
You've been through a lot today, he said.
There's no need to diminish it.
Yeah, but if I don't diminish things, I have to face them at their normal size, and that's horrible.
I think it's usually better to face the world as it is. The more we try to hide from something, the more power we give it.
Don't be wise at me, Oliver. I gave him a look. It's unsexy.
With the air of someone with a lot on his mind, he turned his hot chocolate a quarter circle and then back again.
While we're on the topic of...
unsexy?
Trying to hide from things.
Oh.
You mentioned in the bathroom that our arrangement was no longer feeling quite as artificial as it hitherto had.
Are you trying to stop me freaking out by using words you know I'll mock you for using? His eyes met mine across the table.
Did you mean it, Lucien?
Yes. Was there anything fucking worse than being called on your own sincerity? I meant it. Can we please go back to what's important here, which is that you actually just said hitherto?
As it happens, he continued, adjusting the angle of his mug, I've been having similar thoughts myself.
At that moment, I couldn't tell whether I'd been waiting desperately to hear that, or terrified I might. But it showed how far I'd come, and how seriously committed I was to doing better by Oliver, that I didn't run away screaming. Okay. Good. That's nice. In my defense, my voice had only gone up half an octave.
There's no need to panic. We're just having a conversation.
Can I go back in the bath?
No,
I wheezed. Look, like I said, I have these feelings, and I'm not used to having these feelings. And every time I have these feelings, I have these other feelings, which are... like, when's he going to the press? When's he going to let me down? When's he going to fuck me over?
Lucien...
And... I ran over him before I could stop myself. I don't think I could take it. Not from you.
He was quiet for a moment, frowning thoughtfully.
I know the last thing that can possibly help you right now are promises and platitudes. But I do feel quite confident in assuring you that I will never sell your story to the tabloids.
I'm pretty sure Miles would have said that too.
But in a different context.
His tone was very measured, almost detached, but he also reached across the table and took my limp, damp hand in his.
I'm not asking you to trust in me personally. Obviously, I would be gratified if you could, but I understand that what you've been through renders that difficult.
I want to trust you, though.
You don't have to. But you can trust that I have nothing to gain and everything to lose by turning our relationship into a public spectacle. I don't particularly need the money, and I've invested more than a decade in a job that relies on my reputation for discretion.
I gave him a brittle smile. I'm probably worth a lot more now that my dad's on TV.
My career means far more to me than any sum of money I could reasonably be offered.
It took me probably too long to Rubik's Cube my brain into something that could make sense of this. Okay, yes, I see that.
And, for that matter, he went on, so are you.
Well, that was a thing. Thank you. Really, Fuck. How do we do this?
I confess.
Oliver had gone a little pink around the ears.
I hadn't thought that far ahead. This is new territory for both of us. I don't want to sound cold-feety, but what if we just carried on as we were?
You mean,
he said slowly,
you want us to continue pretending to be in a relationship that we admit feels real to both of us?
Wow, trying to do the right thing was hard, and seemed very similar to fucking everything up. I'm worried that if we try to change too much all at once, it'll go wrong somehow, and then I'll have let you down, and you'll be on your own at your parents' anniversary, and it'll be my fault.
That's kind of you, but I'm not going to put a family party above our relationship.
You don't have to. I put my other hand over his. Leaving aside my occasional meltdowns, which I promise I'll learn to deal with, this is working well for us, and will definitely do what we need it to do. Why rush, or mess with that?
He was giving me an I'm not quite sure who you are, but I like it look. I'm beginning to think you might be better at relationships than you've claimed.
I announced, am growing as a person.
Perhaps I could also do better.
I smiled at him, too tired to care how goofy it was. You don't have to. You're already perfect. Bed happened pretty soon after that, and having just exposed the full depth of my emotional wibble, it seemed a bit pointless to worry about what Oliver would think of my boxers or no pack. As far as I could tell, he wasn't disappointed or repulsed. Instead, he pulled me down into his arms, where I lay quiet and cared for, and quickly drifted off to sleep. We woke late. Well, late by Oliver's standards, so, like, 9, although I kept him in bed for another hour or so by octopusing myself around him and refusing to let go until he told me very firmly he needed the bathroom. While he was abluting and probably remembering to floss and all of those other things we're supposed to do but don't, I dug out my phone and called work.
Coleoptera research, protection... Oh no, wait. That's not right.
Apparently I'd got Alex.
Coleoptera research, reunification and... Oh, bother. Coleoptera rescue, research and...
It's me.
Me who?
Me, Luke.
I'm sorry, Luke's not in yet. Alexander Twaddle speaking.
No, I know who you are, Alex. I'm Luke. Luke is me.
Oh.
I could hear him thinking.
Then why did you say you wanted to speak to Luke?
I didn't... I'm sorry, I must have misspoken.
Don't worry, it's easily done, old thing. Only yesterday I answered the phone with good afternoon, and then realised it was only 11:30.
Alex, I said slowly, wasn't yesterday Sunday?
Gosh, so it was. I thought it was a bit quiet.
Anyway, if I didn't stop this now, we'd be here all week. I called to say I'm not feeling so great, and I won't be coming in today. He made a sound of genuine sympathy.
How beastly for you. Is everything all right?
Yeah, just had a rough couple of days.
I know the feeling. Last month my valet was sick, and I could barely keep it together.
I'm trying to be strong.
Take all the time you need. A good man is hard to find.
At this moment, Oliver came out the bathroom, stripped to the waist. I think, I said, I'll be okay on that front.
Glad to hear it. Toodle-pip.
I hung up and tried not to stare too gormlessly at Oliver, which was easier than it might have been, since my phone was trying to notify itself into an embolism. Glancing into WhatsApp, the group was quiet and currently named You Can Luke, But You Better Not Touch, I got bridged in the face by private message.
Luke, are you okay? What happened with Oliver? Luke? Luke, are you okay? Luke? Luke? Are you okay? Is everything okay?
Oliver's lips twitched. Given he also knew bridge, he'd probably also fallen victim to her texting.
I'll be in the kitchen. Calm down when you're ready.
Yes, I typed. Sorry for the silence, it's all good, we talked about feelings and miles and shit.
OMG, are you kissing right now?
No, Bridge, I'm texting you.
Well, stop it and go kiss Oliver. Anyway, G to G, because geopolitical upheaval has led to pulp paper shortage in Twickenham, and so none of our books are getting printed.
Good luck with that. Thank you for last night.
Anytime, G to G.
Pulling on Oliver's dressing gown, I headed downstairs. Oliver was eating something scarily healthy-looking from a mason jar and reading the Financial Times on his iPad. God, he was adorable.
There's toast.
He glanced up, looking like some kind of weird and highly specific porno for people who are really into incredibly cut men and funny-coloured newspapers.
Or fruit. Or bircher. I can make porridge if you prefer.
I was still a bit too emotioned out for that much fibre. So I helped myself to a banana from a bunch that hung from what appeared to be a bespoke banana hanging place, next to, but not in, the offensively well-stocked fruit bowl.
What's with the... I pointed. Do you have a problem with bananas? Not personally, but they release ethylene, which is a ripening agent and can cause other fruit to go bad.
Oh, right.
I'm sorry. Would you rather I'd said that I was concerned about treason in my fruit bowl and strung them from a gibbet pour encourager les autres?
You remember that time I pretended I spoke French to impress you? Well, I still can't. He laughed and pulled me into a kiss, which got me not quite into his lap, but very much lap adjacent.
You don't need to speak French to impress me.
My heart stuttered, but I still wasn't used to all of this. Intimacy and okayness. What are you eating? I blurted out instead. It looks like spunk with fruit in it.
Thank you, Lucien. You always know exactly what to say.
Sheepishly, I nuzzled into his neck and was thrilled by the discovery of his... whatever the opposite of a 5 o'clock shadow is. The prickle of hair under my lips, a reminder that I was still here. That we both were. Together.
It's bircher, he went on. Oats, soaked overnight in almond milk, and, as you correctly observe, fruit. But, to the best of my knowledge, no semen, human or otherwise.
So it's cold porridge?
A lot lighter and fresher, but substantial enough to keep me going through a court case. Also, I can make it at the start of the week, and it sees me through until Saturday, which is convenient.
I was smiling helplessly at him. Do you put little labels on the jars so you know which is for which day?
No.
He gave me a stern look that somehow wasn't stern at all.
Bircher is fungible.
Well, if it goes fungible, you probably shouldn't eat it. He laughed, somewhat indulgently. But hey, I could get used to being indulged. Especially by Oliver.
Chapter 34.
I'd spent the rest of Monday with Oliver, feeling fragile but content in a sort of snow day haze. We'd talked so much the night before that we didn't have much to say to each other, but that was good somehow. Oliver had mostly sat decorously on his sofa, reading The Song of Achilles, and I'd mostly sprawled over him, napping. I hoped I wasn't going to keep having emotions, because it would get really tiring, really fast. Then, in the middle of the afternoon, and despite my protests, he'd insisted that we go for a walk, which had turned out to be far nicer than a walk round Clerkenwell had any right to be. Of course, taking Monday off meant having to catch up on Tuesday, and since the Beetle Drive was rolling over the hill like a clump of dung under the hind legs of a Scarabaeus Vietti, wow, I had been working at crap way too long, I had a whole lot to do when I got in the office. We'd decided that the fundraiser should include a silent auction back when we, that is to say I, set up the first one a few years ago, and I think we'd just thought it sounded good. But it turned out they were a fuckton of work, because you needed either a small number of expensive things and a lot of rich people, or a large number of moderately priced things and a reasonable number of rich people. And every time it was touch and go whether the balance was going to shake out right. It didn't help that Dr. Fairclough insisted on donating a signed copy of her monograph on the distribution of rove beetles in South Devon between 1968 and 1972, which was apparently a wild time for the Devonshire rove beetle. And I wound up having to buy it every year under a series of increasingly unlikely pseudonyms, because nobody else would bid on it. The most recent had gone to a Ms. A. Stark of Winterfell Road. Just as I was securing a helpfully obscene discount on a Fortnum & Mason hamper, which always did well at an auction, even though they aren't actually especially hard to get hold of, Rhys Jones Bowen appeared in my doorway with his usual impeccable timing. "Busy, Luke?" he asked. "Yes, fantastically." "Oh, that's okay. I'll only be a moment." He claimed my spare chair with the air of a man who has no intention of only being a moment. "I'm just here to pass on a message from Bronwyn. She said thank you for getting photographed outside her restaurant. It did her the world of good, and she's booked out for the rest of the pop-up. She was going to offer to cook you dinner, but she can't because now she's got too much on." What with Cam's wanky think piece nearly destroying my relationship with Oliver, I'd taken a break from my Google alerts. "No problem. Honestly, I kind of hadn't noticed." "It was a lovely article in the end, all about how you were turning over a new, healthier leaf and trying to get your shit together like your dad. And the newspaper man asked Bronwyn, and she said you weren't nearly as much of a knobhead as she thought you were going to be. So that's good, isn't it?" "In an ideal world, my press coverage wouldn't include the word knobhead at all, but yeah, I'll take it." I waited hopefully for Rhys Jones Bowen to leave, but instead he sat there, stroking his beard. "You know, Luke, I've been thinking. As what you might call a social media guru, I recently discovered that there's this website called Instagram. And apparently, if you're a little bit famous, and a bit of a bellend, you can make loads of money on it pretending you like things."
"Are you suggesting..." It took me a moment to even make my head go there. "That I should become a social media influencer?"
"No, no, I'm just saying you should go on the Instagram and help people like Bronwyn. That's what we in the business call leveraging your platform."
"Thanks, but I think I like my platform unleveraged."
"Well, you do you, as they say."
He stood up, stretched theatrically, walked halfway out the door, then stopped and turned.
"By the way, you know how much you and your nice boyfriend enjoyed Bronwyn's pop-up dining experience?"
I wasn't sure I liked where this was going. "Yes."
"Well, I've got this mate Gavin from Merthyr Tydfil, and he's done a series of glass sculptures inspired by the rising of 1831.
Now, I definitely didn't like where this was going, but for some reason I asked a question about it anyway. "The who? The what?"
"That's so typical of the English. Set the 93rd Highlanders on my countrymen and then don't even have the decency to teach it in schools. Anyway..."
He paused ominously.
"You can learn all about it when you go and get your picture taken at Gavin's exhibition."
Call me paranoid, but I was beginning to think Rhys Jones Bowen had an ulterior motive for wanting me on Instagram. I was about to tell him that I had no intention of going to his mate's glass sculpture show, but I did owe him for the whole vegan rescue, and also, I guess, helping people was nice. Besides, it was probably the sort of thing Oliver would actually be into. "Okay," I said. "That sounds interesting. Email me the details, and I'll ask my boyfriend if he's up for it."
"Don't worry, Luke," Rhys said, nodding. "I completely under..." "Oh. Right. I'll be honest, I expected you to say no to that one."
"Must be Gavin's lucky day. But I really do have to get back to work."
"Tell you what, I'll bring you a coffee."
I thanked him and went back to silent auction hustling. Well, silent auction hustling and texting Oliver. "Want to come with me to an exhibition tonight?"
"What sort of exhibition?"
"Funny you should ask that. Glass sculpture. About..." It was while typing this that I realised I'd forgotten what Rhys had said it was about, and even if I could remember, I wouldn't have been able to spell it. "Something bad that happened in Wales?"
"I'm not sure that narrows it down."
"An uprising?"
There was a pause. Anyone else would have been Googling, but Oliver was just typing.
There have been several.
Yes, one of them. Rhys wants me to get some publicity for a friend of his, and I said I would because you've made me a better person, you bastard.
My apologies. I didn't mean to.
It's fine. You can pay for it by making me look like I understand art.
I'd love to, Lucien, but I have to work tonight.
Sorry, not getting out of it that easily. It's on all week.
I am genuinely keen to go.
Of course he was.
Weekend, then?
We have Jennifer's birthday.
Followed quickly by...
I mean, I have Jennifer's birthday, and you are invited to come, but should not feel obligated.
Followed quickly by...
Of course you'll be very welcome. They'd like to meet you.
Calm down. How about Friday?
Works for me.
Okay. On to trying to score some premium tickets for Harry Potter and the Cursed Child at a non-exorbitant price. I was beginning to think the box office was never going to get back to me, when my phone rang.
Hello, Luke O'Donnell speaking.
Hello, Luke.
It was Alex from the front desk, which meant somebody was trying to call me, but there was about a 50% chance he'd already hung up on them.
Got a slightly queer chappie on the line for you. Okay if I transfer him?
Go right ahead.
Righto. Any idea how I, you know, do that?
I didn't sigh. I felt very proud of myself for not sighing. Did you already press transfer before you called my extension?
Yes. I remember to do it that way around because I've got a clever mnemonic. I just remember the phrase, sic transit gloria mundi. Then I remember that you press transfer first, because transit is the second word in the old memory aid. Deuced thing is, I can't remember what comes next.
Hang up.
Alex seemed hurt.
Steady on, old chap. No need to be like that. Just because a fellow has a bit of a tricky time remembering how to use the telephone machine doesn't mean you should just tell him to hang up out of nowhere.
If you hang up the phone, I explained, it will transfer automatically.
Really? That's dashed clever of it. Thanks a jillion.
No problem. Thanks, Alex.
There was the briefest click of a line reconnecting, and then John Fleming's legend of rock voice rumbled down the line at me.
Hello, Luke. I don't think Sunday went the way either of us wanted it to.
That was the problem with reaching out to people. Sometimes they reached back. And while I was mostly trying to be a kinder, gentler, nicer person, John Fleming was the exception. No fucking shit.
I'm back in London. I said I'd look you up.
Well, you have. Congratulations on partially following through on a commitment.
So, how have you been?
There was no way I was telling him about... well, anything. Good, as it happens. Which I should clarify has nothing whatsoever to do with you. There was a slight pause.
I can see you're still carrying a lot of anger with you. I was the same.
Don't even think about telling me you were the same when you were my age.
As time passes, you learn to be more accepting of things that aren't as you'd wish they were.
Did you want to talk? I cradled my office phone awkwardly against my shoulder, as I ran down a list of other auction possibilities. Or are you practicing soundbites for the next time you're on Loose Women?
I was wondering if you'd be free to meet up while I'm in town.
Oh, fuck. I just about made my peace with the idea that I'd reached out and it hadn't worked and I was never going to see John Fleming again. And the fucker hadn't even given me that. Depends. How long are you here for?
Well, there's no hurry. We'll be filming for the next month or so.
I glanced around my office, which was a carnage of pre-Beetle Drive prep. I don't suppose, I tried, since by all rights there should be some upside to having a famous father. You want to come to a fundraiser for the charity I work for?
I was hoping to get a chance to talk to you one-on-one. I'd like an opportunity to set things right.
Look, I... Note to self. Don't start sentences you have no idea how to end. I absent-mindedly flicked the release, and my swivel chair sunk about 3 inches, pretty much matching my mood, right down to the weary hiss. Basically, I had no idea what a setting-things-right conversation with John Fleming would even begin to look like, but I had a creeping suspicion that it would end with him feeling better and me feeling worse. I'd obviously left a really audible thinking gap, because he said,
"You don't have to decide immediately,"
in this tone that made it sound like he was doing me a massive fucking favour. "No, it's fine. We can get dinner or something. I'll find out when Oliver's available." Another pause, from him this time.
"I'm glad Oliver's in your life, but do you not think it'd be easier if it was the two of us?"
Easier for him, maybe.
"And besides,"
he went on,
"I know barristers have very busy schedules. It might be difficult to find a window we can both make."
As was so often the case when it came to John Fleming, I just couldn't. Was I supposed to be flattered that he wanted me all to himself, or creeped out that he was acting like someone off to catch a predator? I mean, nothing good ever began with, "And be sure you come alone." And there was another of my "I'm very conflicted, please talk into this silence" gaps. Whether out of sensitivity to my needs, or a love of his own voice, John Fleming talked.
"I'm aware I'm being selfish here. Of course you can bring your partner if that's what you feel you need."
Great. Way to make me feel weak and codependent.
"But the truth is..."
He hesitated, as if he was sincerely struggling with something.
"It's not easy for someone like me to admit when I've done wrong. And it'll be that much harder in front of an audience."
Wait, what?
"This isn't the kind of conversation we should be having over the phone."
He was right. But this was the closest I'd ever come to getting anything even halfway real from my father, and I didn't know how not to just grab at it. Except I couldn't, because how could I be sure he wouldn't disappear like a gateway to Narnia the moment I went looking for him? There'd been a time when I'd wanted this so much, and maybe that made it worth the risk. Or maybe it really, really didn't. "Can I?" I asked. "Can I think about it?" There was a longer than I would have liked pause.
"Of course you can. I'll send you my personal number and you can contact me on your own terms. Just remember, I'll be here for you until the end."
And with that helpful little reminder he had cancer, John Fleming hung up. Chapter 35. Oliver seemed to genuinely enjoy Gavin's exhibition, although I could have done without his first words as we went through the door being,
"Ah, so you meant the Merthyr Tydfil Rising of 1831.
In any case, while it wouldn't have been my first, second, or indeed 12th choice for an evening out, I was quite enjoying being the sort of person who took his socially acceptable barrister boyfriend to pop-up dining experiences and indie art events. Also, it gave me a bunch of culture points that I immediately cashed in by treating myself to a Twix McFlurry on the way home, which, despite his objections to both the contents of the dessert and the business ethics of the company that sold it, I generously shared with Oliver. It was a bit disorientating getting back to his house and realizing that it was Friday night, and I wasn't at home alone being miserable, or out at a party being miserable. It was even more disorientating being in bed before one. Then again, Oliver's bed had compensations, Oliver being the most obvious, but I'm pretty sure his sheets were Egyptian cotton and were usually freshly laundered. I said, from where I was tucked under his arm. "You know that thing where I was going to be open and honest about, like, my feelings and stuff?"
I hope you're making that sound unnecessarily ominous.
I cringed. Sorry. It's always ominous in my head.
What is it, Lucien?
My dad rang. He wants to meet up for some one-on-one father-son bonding.
And what do you want?
I don't know. That's the problem. I tried to shrug, but it turned into more of a... nestle? I told him I needed to think about it.
Probably wise.
Yeah, get me with my probable wisdom.
Oliver's fingers drifted soothingly up and down my spine. Do you have any sense which way you're leaning?
Really not. It's one of those things where I want to, but I don't want to. Every time I decide to just walk away, I get this little voice in my head saying, "He's got cancer, you knob." And I know I'd be an idiot to trust him, and I know it's probably going to suck. But I think... shit, I might actually be vomiting a little in my mouth as I say this. It's something I've got to do.
I understand.
Of course he did. Of course you do.
I can't work out if I feel appreciated or taken for granted.
A little of both. I wriggled down and nuzzled into his neck. I mean, I guess I'm taking it for granted that you're going to be amazing, but that doesn't mean it's not amazing. He gave an embarrassed little cough.
Thank you. Although I should add I'm not completely unconcerned. I know I've only met your father once, but I can't say he made a good impression.
I don't think he likes you either.
I'm sorry if I made things difficult for you.
Don't be ridiculous. I de-nuzzled and kissed him instead. You always make things better. And I'm not sure I'd be into anyone John Fleming actually got on with.
Even so, I fear I've burned a bridge that didn't have to be burned.
It was a shit bridge, Oliver, and I'm still not completely sure which side of it I want to be on.
I'm sure you don't need to be told this, he said, after a moment. But there's a chance he could hurt you again.
I twisted my head, gazing up at Oliver with the sort of intensity you could only really get away with when you were both in bed and mostly naked. It's a very good chance, isn't it?
Again, I'm rather stating the obvious here, but I don't want you to be hurt.
I'm not mad keen on it myself. I guess I just feel like I'm in a place where even if it goes wrong, I'll be okay. Like it won't utterly wreck me.
That's...
He gave me a slightly crooked smile.
Strangely reassuring.
Sitting on Oliver's freshly made bed the next day, I was starting to think I might have overstated my case, utterly wrecking me-wise. It had been comparatively easy in my sort of a bit fake, sort of a bit real boyfriend's arms to claim I was okay. I was not feeling okay right now. But eventually, I got enough of my shit together to phone John Fleming on the number he'd had his people send my people. Well, me, I'm kind of my own people.
John here,
rumbled my dad, with the confidence of a man who knows he's the only John that matters. Hi. It's me.
Me who? It's not a good time. I'm about to go on set.
Me, your son. You know, the one you want to connect with.
Yeah, I'll be there in a minute.
Oh, he wasn't talking to me, was he?
What was that, Luke?
I was just ringing to say...
Yeah, no, that's great, thanks. Appreciate it.
Still not talking to me.
Look, I said, if you want to meet up, I'm free sometime this week.
Yeah, I'd like that. How about Wednesday? Do you know the Half Moon in Camden?
Well, no, but I can Google it.
I'll see you there at 7. You're on my way, Jamie.
And he was gone. If I'd been superstitious, I would have said it wasn't the best sign that the last thing he'd said to me was, "On my way, Jamie." But I guess I was committed now. And I had an appointment with John Fleming. My dad. On my own. So he could maybe tell me he was sorry he left me. There was no way that was happening, was there? My first instinct, born from years of practice, was to... Actually, I didn't know. 5 years ago, I'd have gone out, got wasted, and got laid. 6 months ago, I'd have gone home, got drunk, and got under my duvet. Now, I just wanted to be with Oliver. And I could? Because he was downstairs? This semblance of a healthy lifestyle was going to take some getting used to. I found him sitting at the kitchen table, elaborately hand-wrapping a wholesale carton of Kinder Happy Hippos. "I can't believe," I said, "I ever thought you were boring." He gave me what I'd come to recognize as his, "I'm not sure if I'm supposed to be insulted" look.
"You mean because when I give somebody a gift, I like to pay attention to its presentation?"
"I'm not being sarcastic, Oliver. This is delightfully strange of you, and not what I was expecting to see today."
"I'm wrapping a present. What on earth is strange about that?"
"It's the fact you're going full Love Actually cinnamon stick on a job lot of cheap German chocolate." He gave a little cough.
"Italian."
"What?"
"It's Italian."
"Isn't Kinder German for child?"
"Yes, but the company is based in Italy."
"I'm so glad we're focusing on what matters here." I folded myself into a chair opposite him. "What are you doing?"
"It's for Jennifer's birthday."
"Oh, yes," I affirmed convincingly. "That is a thing I definitely remembered." He gave me one of those annoying looks that people give when they're not disappointed because they know and care about you, instead of not being disappointed because they have incredibly low expectations.
"How is your father?"
"Dick, like always." I fiddled pointlessly with the vase of newly refreshed table flowers. "And I know I'm trying to be better at this, but I really don't want to talk about it."
"You don't have to, and I'd understand if you weren't feeling up to the party tonight."
"No, I want to. If only for the expression on your friend's face when she discovers you've bought her 500 loosely hippo-themed wafer treats filled with a gooey substance that vaguely resembles chocolate." He blinked petulantly.
"It's not chocolate. It's a milk and hazelnut cream, and they're what I always get her."
"And yet somehow you remain friends?"
"She likes them, and it's sort of a tradition."
I ran my toes up his shin. "I somehow thought you'd be too grown up or something to have a shit gift ritual."
"I think you'll find I can be just as quirky as you can, Lucien."
He haughtily attached a sprig of lavender to his exquisite creation.
"When I choose to be."
"Yeah, but I thought straight people were into, you know, bottles of wine, or, I don't know, toast racks." He covered his mouth with his hand. I wasn't sure if he was laughing or appalled.
"Lucien, you work with heterosexuals. Your mother is heterosexual. Bridget is heterosexual."
"Yeah, and I always buy them wine."
"But,"
he actually wagged a finger at me,
"and please be honest with me when you answer this question, never toast racks."
I sank lower in my chair and nearly wound up on the floor. I panicked, okay? Yes, I know some straight people, but I've never chosen to hang out socially with a large number of them all at once. I'm scared.
"What do you think they're going to do? Put bees on your face?"
"I don't know. What if they don't like me and think you should go out with a woman or a better gay?"
"They're my friends, Lucien. They'll be happy I'm happy."
I stared at him. You're happy. I make you happy. That's a thing I do."
"You know it is. Just maybe don't grill them about their toast racks. They might think you're a tad peculiar."
This opened a whole new chasm of anxieties. "What do I talk to them about then? I don't watch any sports."
"Well, neither do most of them. Jennifer's a human rights lawyer who likes hippos. Peter's a children's illustrator who likes Jennifer. They're just people. I've known them for a long time, and at no point have they threatened to ostracize me if I couldn't tell them...
He paused for a long moment, frowning.
"I was going to cite some obscure piece of sporting information, but as you can see, I don't know any, and that's perfectly all right."
I sighed. "Fine, so I'm being silly."
"You are, but explicably so, and you are being rather charming about it.
I think, I admitted, I'm fixating on the straight thing because these people are important to you, and I don't want to fuck this up.
The way I see it... It was Oliver's gravest voice, so I braced myself for an onslaught of sincerity. Either you won't, which will be nice, or you will, which will be funny.
I burst out laughing. And then, pushing the beautifully wrapped hippos gently aside, leaned over the table to kiss him. Chapter 36. That evening, I was standing with Oliver and an over-decorated box of hippos on the doorstep of a very suburban-looking house in Uxbridge, and I already felt incredibly out of place. "Is this okay?" I asked. "Am I okay? Am I dressed okay?"
"You're fine. This is a nice, relaxed evening. Everyone's going to be very casual and very normal and..."
The door swung open, revealing a stunningly put-together redhead, wearing a full-length evening gown and an actual fucking fascinator. At which point, my mouth also swung open.
"Oliver," she cried, "I'm so happy you could make it. And you've brought Luke. At least, I assume it's Luke."
Her eyes widened.
"Crap, you are Luke, right?"
I was trying, without much subtlety or success, to hide behind Oliver. This was clearly not the kind of party to wear my artfully ripped jeans to. Yes, that's me."
"Come in, come in. Brian and Amanda are already here, because of course they are, and Bridge is running late, because of course she is."
We came in, me pulling at Oliver's elbow like a small child at the supermarket, in order to signal precisely how little I had signed up for this. A man in full black tie met us at the door to the living room. "Hi," he said, presenting a silver tray with a teetering pyramid of Ferrero Rocher on it.
"And be careful, because this is actually quite unstable."
Once again, I tried to safe word to Oliver with my eyes. But he seemed to be taking this totally in his stride, gently plucking a chocolate from the stack.
"Monsieur?"
It was his driest, most laconic voice, which, believe me, was pretty fucking dry and laconic.
"With these Rocher, you are really spoiling us."
The guy nearly spilled his tray in excitement.
"Thank you! Brian completely fluffed it, and this took hours."
"You know," called a deep voice from within, "you can buy them in pyramids now."
"Shut up, Brian. You have forfeited your right to have an opinion on this."
"Peter," said Oliver, as we were ushered past the Ferrero Rocher and into the living room, "please tell me that this whole evening isn't going to be a sequence of pointlessly elaborate 90s references."
"No."
Jennifer gave him a wounded look.
"Some of it's pointlessly elaborate 80s references."
Laughing, he hugged her.
"Happy birthday, darling. Just no Twister and no Pokemon."
"How do you feel?"
Her eyes glinted.
"About Pogs."
He glanced at me.
"I'm sorry, Lucien. These are my friends. I'm not exactly sure how that happened."
"Hey,"
protested Jennifer.
"It's my birthday. If I want to dress up like an idiot and make you all eat prawn cocktail in celebration of the decades that spawned me, that's my choice. And you will damn well support it."
"You could have at least warned me. I've been trying to convince this man I'm cool."
She sighed.
"Oh, Oliver, even when the word cool was cool, cool people didn't use it."
While she was completely right, I felt I should at least try to defend my ambiguously fake boyfriend from his definitely real friends.
"Not true. Bart Simpson said cool."
"Bart Simpson was a fictional 10-year-old,
pointed out the man who had failed to Rocher correctly. Brian, was it?
"I'm not sure," Oliver interjected. "I'm comfortable being compared to Bart Simpson."
I was probably going to get dumped, but there was really no other response.
"Don't have a cow, man," I said,
at exactly the same time everybody else did.
"You know,"
Oliver put his arm around my waist. Lucien was concerned that he wouldn't have anything in common with you. He clearly failed to account for the fact that mocking me is everybody's favourite pastime. Jennifer snuck a curious look at me.
Where are you, Luke? We were all worried we were going to scare off another of Oliver's boyfriends.
We don't scare them off.
This was Brian again, in the too jolly tone of someone about to be slightly more insulting than he intends to be.
Oliver does.
I'll admit. Oliver had tensed up beside me, so I thought it was a good moment to launch myself into the conversation. That the evening gown did throw me, but I'm totally here for whatever this is. Jennifer thought about it for a moment.
Well, I'm not quite sure what it is, actually. It's a sort of celebration of things 8-year-old me thought 30-year-old me would have in the future, except I thought we'd be having this party on the moon.
Now then, Peter clapped his hands in a hosty kind of way. Can I get either of you a drink? We've got Lambrini, Bacardi Breezers, Cointreau, some things that are actually nice, and Amanda's in the kitchen with mead. I blinked. Did I miss the 90s mead boom?
We're reenactors, explained Brian. We never don't bring mead. Also, they didn't say which 90s.
Oliver drifted over to one of the sofas and drew me down next to him.
I'll have one of the things that are actually nice.
You? I poked his knee. And not in the spirit. What flavour breezes do you have? Peter perked up. Good question. I think some pink ones, and maybe some orange ones, and possibly a slightly different orange one that might be peach. I'll take the slightly different orange one.
Coming right up, and I'll see what's happened to Amanda.
And Peter, cried Jennifer, bring the vol-au-vents. Or is it vol-au-vent? I think technically.
A woman who looked remarkably like Brian, apart from the beard, as in Brian had the beard, not the woman, appeared in the doorway.
It would be vol-au-vent, because vol-au-vent is from the French to fly in the wind, and so the plural would be they fly in the wind, which would be ils volent avant.
The conversation ricocheted off the way conversations between people who've known each other far too long tend to. And even though I didn't know what the infamous digger incident was, or what happened at Amanda's 28th, I felt surprisingly unleft out. I mean, I did go through a short routine of emotional gymnastics, remembering how I'd freaked out when we'd gone to dinner with Alex and Miffy, and being slightly protective of the closeness I had with Oliver in private. Especially since he tended to be so buttoned up and polite in public. But actually, it was nice to see him happy and relaxed and surrounded by people who cared about him. Eventually the doorbell rang, and Peter took up his Ferrero Rocher station. I assumed this was going to be some people I hadn't met, because I'd had a message from Bridge saying she was 5 minutes away, which meant she'd be at least another hour. Voices drifted in from the corridor.
God, sorry we're late,
boomed somebody about 2 shades posher than me, and 3 shades less posh than Alex.
The twins were absolute shits. Shit, by the way, being the operative. Oh, monsieur, with his Rocher, you're really spoiling us.
Suck it, Brian. That was probably Peter.
Please, continued the posh man, for Christ's sake, bring me some alcohol. And be careful when you're hanging up my jacket. I think one of the little bastards threw up on it.
I told you when they were born.
Another stranger, a woman this time.
We should have left them on a hillside overnight and kept whichever ones survived.
There was a flapping of coats and a shuffling of shoes, and Jennifer and Peter came back into the room, followed by a surprisingly dapper man in a plum waistcoat and a small round woman in a polka dot Lindy Hop dress. Oliver, who wasn't so relaxed as to forget his manners, stood to greet them.
Ben, Sophie, this is Luke. He's my boyfriend. Luke, this is Ben, who's a stay-at-home dad, and Sophie, who is Satan.
I'm not Satan, she huffed. I'm Beelzebub at worst.
Jennifer,
Oliver made a slightly imperious gesture.
Who was your last client?
Sophie rolled her eyes. They'd clearly played this game a lot.
A refugee from Brunei who'd have been tortured if he'd been deported.
Jennifer lifted her glass of Lambrini in a toast-like gesture.
Yours, Oliver?
A barman who stole from an employer who cheated him. Yours, Sophie?
She mumbled something incoherent.
What was that? We didn't hear you.
Fine.
She threw her hands in the air.
It was a pharmaceutical company whose drugs, let me be very clear, cannot be proven to have killed any children at all. What can I say? I like clients who can actually pay.
Just to check, I asked, having slowly come to the realization that Oliver's friends being straight was not the only thing that made them different from my friends. Am I the only person in this room who isn't either a lawyer or married to a lawyer? Peter reverentially returned the wobbly Ferrero Rocher to the Ferrero Rocher table.
Well, you could fix that. It is legal now.
The which I think he means.
Amanda looked up from the sofa, where she'd been sitting largely on top of her husband.
That it would be legal for you to marry Oliver. Not that it would be legal to kill every lawyer in the room, whatever Shakespeare had to say on the subject.
What?
Cried Peter, comically startled.
Why would you go there? Obviously I meant marriage, not murder.
Tell me that again when those three have been talking jurisprudence for 3 hours.
Oliver cleared his throat. He'd gone a little pink.
I know you're all terribly excited I have a boyfriend, but I think that dropping the M-bomb at this stage in my relationship would be an excellent way to ensure I don't have one for much longer.
Sorry. Peter hung his head. I wasn't actually. I didn't mean.
Please don't break up with him, Luke.
Have another Ferrero Rocher.
And for the record, Oliver went on, just because I have legal right to do something doesn't mean I actually have to do it. Especially not with someone I've been dating for less than 2 months. No offence, Luke.
I pulled dramatically out of his arms.
Are you fucking kidding me? What am I going to do with the dress?
This earned a proportionate laugh and made me feel like I was boyfriending appropriately.
Shall we not?
Jennifer threw the room a stern look.
Attempt to make anyone feel comfortable by suggesting they get married. We're actually thrilled to bits you're here, Luke. And the good news is only some of us are lawyers.
Yes. Ben was pouring himself a glass of the good wine. I live off my wife. It's extremely modern and feminist of me. And I did law at university, added Brian, with Morecambe's slant and honey place over here. Thankfully, I realised it was fucking awful and I was shit at it, and I went into IT.
As for me, began Peter, before he was interrupted by the doorbell, that'll be Bridget.
Jennifer went to let her in, and Bridge burst into the front room, still taking off her coat a few seconds later.
You are not,
she cried,
going to believe what's happened.
The room got about halfway through a chorus of, Careful, Bridge, when the hem of her jacket caught Peter's lovingly stacked pile of Ferrero Rocher and sent them flying, bouncing and rolling across the floor. She spun round.
Oh my gosh, what was that?
Nothing, Peter sighed. Don't worry about it. He, Ben and Tom, who had followed Bridget in, began to gather up the wreckage of the ambassador's reception. What's happened? Asked pretty much everyone.
Well, I can't really talk about it, but we've recently acquired a very promising new author who specialises in high-concept science fiction, and it got a starred review in Publishers Weekly and everything, and there were some wonderful pull quotes, and the one we decided to run with especially recommended...